Hello and welcome back, everybody, to 8Bits, the show about the people behind the tech, where we interview them to learn about their journey and how they got into tech. I'm your host, Brandon Minnick, and with me, as always, is the amazing PJ Metz. PJ, how's your week?
My week's going great now that I'm here. It was good before, too. It's not like this is the only bright spot in the dark week of work. That's not what's happening. I actually like work. No, it's been going well. I'm doing very well, and I'm excited to be here today. I think it's going to be a good show. Hi, Jelly.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Also excited because I am going on vacation this weekend. It's a holiday weekend here in the U.S., so we're going to go to the beach and just relax.
It is a holiday. It's a 3-day weekend this weekend.
Monday is President's Day.
And next Friday is a friends and family day for GitLab. So I've got Monday off and next Friday off.
What a day.
Listen, GitLab does a cool thing called Friends and Family Day. They started it during the pandemic. During the pandemic, they were like, hey, our fully remote workforce is like crazy productivity right now. And they looked at their workforce. They're like, guys, what are you? And they're like, well, we're just home and we're just working. It's like, okay, stop. Everyone has to take at least one day off a month, and they created Friends and Family Day.
Such a great idea. Because, truly, at companies, especially ones that do unlimited vacation, and for those on the audio podcast, I did that in air quotes because it's not really unlimited. There's always like, well, you know, after 3 weeks of vacation, people will start asking questions. But yeah, it's always tough for folks to step away, break away. I mean, heck, I know even though we'll be at the beach, I'll still be checking emails and looking at stuff. I won't be responding to things or necessarily doing anything, but staying in the loop. And
yep.
That's on me.
That's what
I probably
call
shouldn't,
it.
But
I'll probably have like Slack open and like maybe like my to-do list on GitLab open just to see what's on there. And I'll consider doing some work once in a while. I like what I'm doing. Like I'm building content. Yeah. And I'm making, you know, videos and presentations and stuff for students. So like I like doing that stuff. I can only read so much from my new e-reader that I just got. So I need a break.
It's the hardest part for me is, yeah, I love what I do. And a lot of the job I'm in now is stuff that I used to do in my free time anyways. So a lot of it still doesn't feel like work.
Right.
Yeah.
They say if you love what you do, then you can teach a man to fish.
Yep.
I think that's the way it goes, right? Normally, if this were in front of a live audience, there would have been uproarious laughter there. But all I have are audio clips, so we'll just go with this instead. Terrible. All right. Moving on. This is a quality podcast, y'all.
That's right. So, PJ, do you have any announcements coming up? I know I'm leaving for vacation, so I've got one foot out the door. I don't have anything queued up actually for the rest of the month. I was supposed to be speaking at a conference in Las Vegas in about 2 weeks, but got canceled because of COVID. So, staying home.
That's right. We've got actually, it finally was just confirmed. I'm going to be in Rhode Island at the beginning of March for a computer science education conference. And we're making a little GitLab photo booth for people to show up and take a picture with our little DevOps school bus because we're cute. But I'm excited to be going to a conference with my boss this semester. And it's funny because like business thinks in quarters, but schools think in semesters. And so this semester, because I'm in education, I'm looking to actually be on campus at least two universities. So that's something I'm starting to put together. It's going to be kind of cool to show up and teach some students how to make either a Twitter bot or a Discord bot or something so they can see how they can use GitLab for their work and their play. You know, making Twitter bots is just fun, pure fun. So
love it. I mean, I don't think Git was around when I was in college, but they definitely didn't teach us anything about source control. I think back then it was SVN, which We don't have to talk about that. That was painful.
Well, listen, today's show is a great one, and it's a guest that I was personally very excited to have on. We got to stream previously, myself and this guest, on, I believe, the Palumi Twitch channel, where I was said, oh, I'm learning Python. And our guest said, well, you should come on and show some Python and build a Twitterbot live. And I was like, oh, I'm not there yet, but we did it anyway, and we did our best. We basically crowdsourced the whole thing, and immediately people in the chat started pulling merge requests on the file to fix some problems. But I'd love to introduce, welcome to the stream, everybody, Maddie Stratton.
Hey. Woo. Oh, look at all the sound effects. I have a soundboard that I never use.
Does it have lasers?
No. Yeah. Well, it could. I never used it. I mostly used it for the, you know, sort of rim shot and applause and groan, you know. Yeah. Lasers are a good move, though. Yeah.
I've got this one.
Oh, a little record scratch. Yeah.
A little.
What?
So how did I get here? Yeah.
This is me.
Apparently, I was reading the other day. So everyone was like, so where did that come from? And like, there's not, like, everyone just started referencing it, but it's not actually from something.
It's like conceptually, really? Like, not that exact implementation, but like,
yeah.
And I think what everybody would think in their head is that it would be Saved by the Bell, because it's like very Zach Morris, like, Time Out, but that's,
yeah.
But that's not what Time Out, you know, yeah, that's,
I think of Ferris Bueller.
Right, but that doesn't really happen. It never stops. He just does fourth wall breaks, right? You know,
he talks to us.
You know what it makes me think of, actually? You know what? It's funny because you're going to think it's like an 80s comedy thing. But you know what that really is? Is it's freaking Goodfellas. Think about how Goodfellas starts.
Oh, my God.
That's what it is, right? It's the freeze frame. And he's like, as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to be, you know, so it's, yeah, like.
That's
mystery
true.
Solved. You heard it
maybe,
first here.
I don't know.
Breaking on Apex.
Yeah.
It's been Goodfellas all along.
That's right.
Always has been. Always has been. You need the astronaut meme, right?
Right.
Wait, you mean that Goodfellas stretch is really Goodfellas? Always has been.
Always has been. All right.
Somebody
listen,
go make
Maddie,
that meme for me. Brendan, go make it.
Yeah, Brendan, you got work to do. Maddie, tell us who you are, what you do. You got the screen. It's yours now. Tell us all about yourself, please.
Geez, all about myself. Okay, well, we'll do this a little bit at a time. So currently, so my name is Maddie Stratton, like job-wise, because we define ourselves by our job, clearly. I'm a staff developer advocate at Palumi. We do infrastructure as software. We can talk about Palumi stuff at some point. I've been here almost a year now, which is nuts. I know we like to talk about stories and origin story stuff, so I'm gonna, you know, kind of treat this a little lightly, but I basically worked in technology operations for a couple decades and then kind of came over to the vendor side. And so when I've been on the vendor table, I was at Chef for a fair amount of time. I've been at PagerDuty, I was at Red Hat, now I'm at Palumi. Been part of the DevOps movement for a long time. I always feel like I'm new to it, but every year the percentage of time that I've been part of DevOps is a greater percentage. We'll talk a little bit about that. But yeah, I'm a global chair of DevOps Days. I started and continue to run the one that's here in Chicago. Big believer in the DevOps community and the DevOps movement. And now I'm at Palumi because I really dig InfraCode, and all of this comes, you know. I've said before, it's kind of a fun thing. Those of you, if you're in developer relations and you're single, one of the hardest things is how do you explain to a potential date what your job is? And end result is nobody actually cares that much about how detailed you are. You don't have to explain it that well. But I usually say, hey, I worked in ops for 20 years and now they pay me to talk about it. So
that's perfect.
I still struggle to tell my parents what my job is. friends.
I work in tech, and then I'm like, but like, well, I'm not, don't worry. Like, I don't have like a puffy vest or anything like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah. No right, Patagonia. Right? You know,
yeah. I do.
Although
have
you can't get
Patagonia.
Those anymore. Patagonia won't do branded shit anymore. Because it, yeah, that's what I heard. They're like, no, we don't really do that.
Dang. All right. Well, Patagonia, if you want anything branded, you got to do it yourself, kids. So get your iron on patches out like it's nothing.
But North Face, if you're listening, we are still looking for sponsorships.
That's right.
We're doing 8-Bits North Fest. North Fest.
And Auburn. 8-Bits North Fest.
There you go.
North by North Vest. I told you this would be better with a live audience.
It is. Live studio audience. You need not Don Pardo sounding, but like a recording at the beginning that's like 8-Bits is recorded in front of a live studio audience. Yeah.
No, but we'll save it. That's for the Patreon. You'll get my special.
There we go. Yeah.
That's right. So Maddie, let's go way back, because we were chatting a bit before the show, and you mentioned that theater was a big part of early life. Maybe it still is. So take us back there and share with us, how did a path through the theater get you into now working with tech and computers?
Yeah. So I definitely sort of, nothing ever goes the way that I expect. And that's, you know, what they say, life is the thing that happens when we make other plans. So when I was in school, I, you know, got very involved with theater, loved acting, loved directing. And initially I went to college, for theater undergrad. And but I also always have loved technology, going all the way back to when I remember being in second grade and we had the Apple IIs, at the elementary school. And this is, by the way, just for everybody listening, like, you don't have to have this like old school dork origin story that I do to do well in tech. This is not like my bona fides. I just think it's funny. So back in those days, like, I remember in the Chicago Tribune, which was like our paper, like in the Sunday funnies and the comics, there was like a section that was like about computers, and they would have like basic program, like programs in BASIC that were printed in the comics, right? In the Sunday comics. So I remember I would cut them out, bring them to school, and, type them in and to do these programs and stuff. And that's sort of how I, I always thought that was fun. My dad always had Apple computers and stuff. And so I kind of would play around with that. But I was saying, if you look at like my senior bio for the theater club in high school, it was like, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And mine said something like either a successful but miserable computer programmer or a unsuccessful but happy actor. And the reality was, it was neither of those. It was a disgruntled system administrator, because, at the time, nowadays people would be like, yeah, I want to be an SRE when I grow up or whatever. Like, nobody wanted to be a sysadmin. Like, back in my day of sysadmin stuff, like, anybody I worked with in ops in the 90s and the early 2000s, like, their origin story was always they're from the military, or I was a geology major and I had to get a real job and whatever. Like, nobody went to school to be a sysadmin, right? We all just sort of became them. But anyway, so I went to school for theater and I ended up dropping out of college. I ended up dropping out of college twice. The first time I dropped out was as a theater major, and I needed to get a job. And I ended up going to work for this, like, it was like an Apple service center. It was this little company called Glen Ellen Computer Services here in the Chicago suburbs. And I went there, and it was like, I was fixing computers, but they also were an ISP. And this was like 1995. So I learned HTML, because it was just like, we had to sort of know a couple things. And I got a job as a webmaster at this company called Midwest Computer Works, which at the time was the biggest competitor to CDW. There was a time that nobody has ever heard of Midwest Computer Works anymore, but we were, and this is when it was all mail order, right? So like, it was a big deal to move to online. So like, I remember having to learn how to write like a shopping cart in Perl, and all this stuff. And this was blah, blah, blah. And I just kept sort of stumbling my way around. And let's be 100% clear, it's a lot easier to stumble around and be successful in tech when you look like me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But a lot of things, my career has been very serendipitous, which I think is true for a lot of us. It's if you know, you never know your plans, like the junctions. If you ever played that game about how did I get like to PJ, like that record scratch. Okay, how did I get here? And I ended up spending a fair amount of time in the Windows world. And I never knew Windows. Like when I was quote growing up, we didn't have PCs. It was all Apple and stuff. I didn't know. And then when I went to school, we were using Unix systems. I didn't know shit about Windows. But when I was doing Apple work, a lot of these graphic design companies or graphic shops, they would, the designers all used Macs, but then they would have this like Windows NT machine as their rip station. So Windows NT existed in my world. So I sort of had to learn it a little bit. And then I kind of fell into a job at a system integrator and they paid for me to get my MCSE and learn all that. And it just, and then that became 10 years of a Windows sysadmin and God bless me having to manage SharePoint and stuff. Right. Like, and it was all because of one random thing. And I always love tracking back to like this inflection that happens. So I wouldn't be sitting here. There's two points. One I mentioned in the green room time I'm going to mention in a second because I think it's fun. But one that goes way back. So much of my history and why I'm doing the job that I do, why I'm where I am, is because I decided to get involved in theater in high school, which was a little bit of a whim. Now, what had happened is I joined our speech team. Some schools call it forensics. Because my buddy was like, hey, I get extra credit in speech class if I go to this meeting, will you go with me? And I went. I'm like, oh, this sounds like it'd be fun. And I, you know, got assigned, this is when I was like a sophomore, I was doing duet acting was the event that I got assigned into, right? Or that I tried out for, and they said, okay, we're going to have you do. And actually, the scene we did was from The Producers, I just remembered, which was awesome. It was the opening scene of The Producers with Bialystock and Bloom, and I played Leo Bloom. But the guy that I was matched up with was a senior and he was very involved in theater. And, you know, after we'd been practicing and stuff and something came up, long story short, about how were we going to practice together over Christmas break? And there was Theater Fest was happening where everybody goes downstate. It's a big thing. And my partner said something about, you know, oh, I couldn't do this time because of Theater Fest. And our coach said, Matt, are you going to be at Theater Fest? And my partner said, why would he be going? And I was like, oh, it's on like John Bond, right? And so I decided to try out for the play and do all that. And that got me into theater. And then that's how I met my first wife. Like all sorts of stuff happened when I went down that. And so I'm like, this guy was like a jackass, but I guess I got to thank him because I wouldn't have like that. I would have that right. Divergent. There's an alternate universe, right? There's a metaverse thing where that's not me. And I went and end up getting an MBA, right? A theater through spite. Okay. So the other important part of my career has come from spite as well. Years ago I was, it's sort of towards the beginning of DevOps. I almost said the beginning of DevOps days, the beginning of the days of DevOps. Mm-hmm. I was at an organization and I wanted us to start implementing Infracode. I was like, let's do this chef thing. And so I proposed that. And I had been running the tech ops team. I'd been moved into an architect role and somebody else had sort of taken over. And he didn't have a whole lot of respect for me or my team, as we found out. And I was like, so I sort of put together a proposal. I'm like, I think we should, you know, investigate. We should implement Chef and let's get going. And, you know, he was like, oh, you know, this would take us a year to get implemented and tens of thousands of dollars in training. And no, this is just too much for your team. So I was like, all right. So over the course of a couple of weeks, like in my evenings and weekends, I wrote a few chef cookbooks to handle not all of our infrastructure, but a fair amount. And I kind of turned up with it and was like, hey, man, this wasn't that hard. And then like 3 to 4 weeks later, my job was eliminated. But because of that, I went and got more involved in the DevOps community, went and worked for a consulting company doing cloud and DevOps. And again, if that didn't happen, you know, so I would say that I learned Chef out of spite. But if, you know, this person hadn't let me go or late, like I would not be sitting here today talking to you all. So anyone who's watching this, I'm sorry that happened.
And don't spite Maddie because you might inspire him to solve world hunger.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mars. Who knows?
I'm pretty sure Matt doesn't know how to build a car. That doesn't. Matt definitely doesn't know how to give me $20,000. He can't do that. How often, Brandon, how often do we talk about that path and how strange that path can be for people on this show? It comes up all the time.
It is. It's super common. And that's one thing I found is you set goals, but keep them flexible because you never really know where you're going to end up. You never know what opportunities are going to pop up. I mean, if the pandemic had never happened, I don't think I ever would have started coding and streaming with PJ. And here we are 50 plus episodes into a podcast.
It's true. And I know especially that like the only reason I'm involved in tech right now is because you said, you know, what I do is kind of like teaching. You just have to learn how to code. So I was like, all right, sure. And it's really changed my life. And the fact that I even met you, even though we went to the same college, we never met at the same college. I only met you because I was dating someone who, when they graduated, moved to Melbourne, Florida, and you got one job offer in Melbourne, Florida after you graduated. So we just happened to be in the same town, in the same group of friends. And here I am with like a variety of amazing things I've bought with tech money behind me. Like, thanks, fate. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I think it also goes to show, and that's kind of the ethos of this show of 8-Bits, right, is to demonstrate all these various paths to get into the tech community, to whether it's you learn to code on your own, you get a degree. There's really no one prescribed path, and there's really no one prescribed start date. So you could be mid-career, like PJ was a high school teacher for over 10 years, learned to code, and here we are. Whereas, you know, my path was more the traditional route, but you don't have to do that anymore. Anybody can do it. You can do it.
I think that's a really good thing to point out too, is that because we tend to focus and amplify like the quirky stories and the non-traditional stories and everything, but like the traditional story is just as valid. Like you don't have to have a like super obscure origin story to be awesome in tech.
Yeah.
You can 100% have said, I went, I got my degree, I did this thing, I went and I did an internship, I just went through the traditional path, and you know what? You are just as awesome, just the same way that, like, as you know, I referenced before, I'm like, we all love to tell the stories about interrupts and having to configure modem boards, and you know, we all get grumpy about this stuff, and it can feel gatekeepy. Yeah. And I would never tell someone to not feel a certain way. But the reason is because these things are just like kind of funny or creative or they're it's of interest, but it doesn't mean it's the only right thing. Right. So, and the other place where it's funny, I was thinking about this though. I was talking to somebody not too long ago and I think we're putting together like a talk proposal. And I was like, I feel like non-traditional is the new traditional. In a way, then I thought about that. I'm like, I bet the numbers don't back that up because, you know, but because of what we talk about. So here's my analogy. It's like a DevOps Days analogy. So when we think about one of the core concepts of DevOps, we talk about this idea of comms. It's culture, automation, lean, measurement, and sharing. And you'll feel like it seems like we talk about culture way more than we talk about anything else. And it's like, does that mean it's the most important? And it's like, no, it's just the one that we have to make people pay attention to. I don't have to convince engineers to play with automation tools. They're just going to do that. That's fine. But, or the same thing where it's like, why are we always talking about empathy? Why are we not talking about that? I'm like, because that part you don't have to be told about. You already know, right? So like we on one hand, so we want to amplify these non-traditional stories. But it doesn't mean it's more that we just sort of have to talk about them more so that they're heard, but it's to get them to be heard as much as the traditional ones that already are normalized. But I just, I want it to be fair that like, you don't have to have an amazing X-Men worthy origin story. The awesome attack, right? You can, you know, and you can just show up and do your shit and clock out at the end of the day and not care anymore. And that's awesome too. Just, you know, yeah.
I think that there's a, I think it's that everyone has an interesting path, whether you took the traditional path into tech or not. Like Brandon says, his path was traditional, but he wasn't really doing a lot. He was doing some rack and stack stuff at the company he worked at before, and he was doing some communication stuff, but it's still very different from where he ended up. So like, yeah, traditional in the sense of the right degree, but sometimes these left turns come out. Like, I don't think Brandon was ever like, and I'm going to end up in San Francisco and I'm definitely going to be writing in Xamarin and it's going to happen. Like, it's the non-traditional paths need to be highlighted and validated, but traditional paths, you're valid too. And your story and your way that you get here is a good story, because the reasons we get into things is and, you know, it's intensely personal, as I stumble through that sentence. Like, the reason that you got into tech is related to theater, which came to you out of spite, because a lot of theater is built out of spite. Like, you don't go to a bunch of late night Rocky Horror Picture Show showings without building a little bit of spite somewhere. Yeah. But I think that you're absolutely right. I think there's a focus on non-traditional roles, because I think that historically it's been excluded, but you said, I don't know that the data backs it up. I think I just read recently that something like around like 42% of working developers have either gone through a boot camp or are self-taught. Mm-hmm. Oh. So like, those numbers are shifting and changing, and the companies are taking notice. And I do think in what we all do in DevRel, more likely to see non-traditional roles to get to DevRel specifically.
I could see that. See that because because
it's a non-traditional role.
That's what I was sort of getting at, right? Like, it's not right? really part of your path. And it's this is a whole other topic that I can and have ranted about, and the because I part of why the non-traditional, I think, is helpful, and it doesn't even have to be non-traditional in that, like, no, I said on a webinar last week, it was like, you know, DevRel are empathy engineers, right? And so this is why interesting and different backgrounds across your team are really powerful, because there's no one type of person of user that you have, one type of consumer, right? So and I think that it's not impossible to have empathy for someone if you haven't lived their life, but it's a lot easier. And I've said this before, you know, I say I do DevRel on easy mode when I do DevRel for ops, because I was in the shit for 20 years. Like, I don't have to work hard to have empathy for people that have a rough time in ops. Like, it's there.
And ops 20 years ago was definitely an absolute battlefield.
But it's interesting because there's a thing, and this is where I'm going to tread lightly because it's going to start to sound a little gatekeepy, and I don't mean it that way. There are certain types of DevRel that is very, very hard to do if you haven't actually done the job. And I don't mean because you don't have the technical skill. And I don't even mean that you can't own it. This was also the example I'm going to give in this. And this is, by the way, that doesn't mean that all DevRels, that's true. Because another statement that Maddie has made many times is DevRel contains multitudes. Everybody does not do the same thing or bring in the same strength. So that's the important part to remember. It doesn't mean you can't do DevRel if you haven't done it. But there's a style that works that's a lot easier to do just by having it. So I'm going to bring this back to a sales engineering reference, but it'll be similar. So when I was at Chef, before I was doing DevRel things in the world, I was a sales eng, right? And so who were we selling to? We're selling to ops people. And so two little things about that. One was the rep that I worked, that I was partnered with all the time, you know, like she said to me once, she said, Matt, she's like, this happens all the time. We go into this room And she's like, you know, I see all of the ops people are sitting back. You can't see me crossing my arms if you're listening to the podcast, but they're sitting back in their chairs with their arms crossed when we start. And a few minutes in, they all start leaning in and listening to you. And I said, you know why? Because I made a joke about System D. Right. I gave the shibboleth that was like, I've done this.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't mean you have to do that. So where that connected, though, is we had someone on our team who was a awesome sales eng, but like he was younger and didn't have a lot of experience. And it just was, he couldn't, like, it was nothing against him. And actually now he's done this. He could do this amazingly, you know, years later, but like he couldn't have done the job the way that I did it. And it would have been unfair to expect that. Right. Because it's like, hey, the way you reach them is in a different way. And the same thing is true with like DevRel. So like I come from this, like I've been on the journey. So I can talk to you in the way of someone who's been on the journey. You don't have to have been on the journey to understand someone's journey. It's just easier if you have. So in like so many other ways, I do things on easy mode, right? I'm doing DevRel on easy mode because what I choose to do DevRel for is a lived experience of mine. You know, but there's other, again, it contains multitudes. And I think that's one of the things that we have to start to learn about this is that like your teams don't scale horizontally. And I know this isn't a DevRel podcast, so, you know, we don't have to go, like, that's a whole other thing that I have thoughts about, but like, you can't expect everybody on your team to have the same thing. We're T-shaped or M-shaped, you know, where that comes. And I think that's an overall better thing for us to understand in our teams. And that goes back to the non-traditional. Because of that, it means your team is more robust because you've had different backgrounds. You think about things differently. You have a different perspective. You have a different context. So it's just funny. It's too bad Whitney destroyed. So remember when I was talking about I was talking to someone about non-traditional being the new traditional? It was Whitney. You know, so, but I think she missed it when I said that because I think she just joined the stream now. So anyway, shout out to Whitney, who is a great example of, by the way, have you had Whitney on the show?
Oh, not yet.
You need to.
Writing it down.
Welcome to the show, Whitney.
Now welcome to the show.
Can I make another recommendation for you? Annie Hedgepeth. So I think she's still at HashiCorp. She has a great story. I love people that have fun stories, right? Like both because it's inspirational, but also because it's interesting. Again, no offense to anybody who's like, I got my computer science degree. I went that and did this. That's great. You're interesting for other reasons. It's just not that. So
it's fantastic. You mentioned DevOps podcast that this is not, and you're right. This is not a DevOps podcast, but I've heard rumors whispered across the great oceans that you have a DevOps podcast.
I do. So this has a fun story, origin story too. People are usually tired of hearing stories about this stuff, but that's what this show's about. So anyway, so I have a podcast called Arrested DevOps. And here's a little bit of its, first of all, we are, to the best of my knowledge, someone could correct me, the longest running still active DevOps podcast. So there were shows before us about DevOps. They have pod faded. That's fine. They had the time. They did the thing they needed to do. There definitely have been shows that have come after us that might be more popular, but we're still around. People have been counting us out for years. Wait, how does that go? Come on, PJ, you got it for me. Like,
hold on.
Yeah.
This one?
Oh, no, not that. I was trying to think of the rap lyric. There's a rap lyric I want. Whitney will get it for me. Like,
oh, wait. We'll find it.
Okay, we'll fix it.
Totally conscious rap right now. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so here's sort of the story about Arrested DevOps. It's kind of fun, I think. So it started with I was going to write a blog, and I needed a name. And my friend Jess, who doesn't work in tech at all, she's the one who coined the name Arrested DevOps, which is amazing. What am I going to do with it? And then I was like, I want to do a podcast. And my intent was, so the way that I learned about DevOps, the way I learned DevOps at first was through podcasts, through listening to DevOps Cafe or The Ship Show or Food Fight. But the problem was like, none of those shows were built around the idea that you were new. Nothing against them, but like I learned it through osmosis, right? You know, I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm going to listen to your shows enough. Over time, I'm going to understand what continuous delivery means or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, all right, I want to do a show that is for the person who knows nothing about DevOps, who, like, the joke was always my boss read about DevOps in the InFlight magazine and told me to do it. Because apparently there's lots of articles in, you know, Horizons magazine about DevOps. And I, now, if you're a listener of the show, you know that that's not really what our show turned into, because one thing is you can't control your audience. We started to have people that would be listening to the show. I'm like, why are you listening to the show? You should be on the show. And so, but I reached out to, you know, I wanted an accountability partner because I'm very good at starting things and not very good at continuing them. So, there's a guy that I had met at an Azure meetup here in Chicago named Trevor. And I was like, hey, and he was more of a, you know, a coder, a software engineer, also quite a bit younger than I am. So different generation, so to speak. And we're like, let's do this show together. And so we kind of started doing it. It just sort of progressed. And over the years, we've, you know, added more hosts and gotten more people involved. And, you know, I remember if you're one of my favorite podcasts is Greater Than Code, which I don't know if you or any of your listeners are familiar with. So Jessitron, who's one of the hosts of Greater Than Code, I met her at Redeploy a few years ago. And I was just sort of like total fanboy because, like, I love her talks. I love her on Greater Than Code. And she said something to me about, like, oh, we were having lunch, and she's like, we should have you on Greater Than Code. I'm like, oh my God, right? You know, when you get invited to be on one of your favorite shows. And then I was sort of like, you know, I have a podcast, and, you know, I got her to come on the show. And, like, right after, she's like, I had such a great time. And then she's like, if you're ever looking for more hosts and stuff, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So, yeah. So, you know, Jessitron is one of our hosts, and it's like, we keep going. So it's about twice a month. It's very practitioner oriented, you know, like I don't know. And it's, I every now and again, I kind of think about, is it too much? Do we, you know, but it's, I feel like we're part of the community. And, you know, what gets me is anytime I'm like, I'm done, it's time for us to be done with the show, then you get that like message on LinkedIn or you get the Twitter DM that's like, oh, I learned this thing and it changed my job. Or, I mean, we get that a lot, and it's, mm-hmm. It means a lot. So also that being said, as hard as it is for me to take a compliment, I will tell you, if there's anyone who's created content, who does a show, who does a thing that's had an impact on you, tell them, even if you just tell them a little bit, because it means the world.
Yeah. And keeping the people who are creating content that you enjoy, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a stream, whether it's a show, whatever it is, if they're creating something that you like, tell them, shout them out, tag them, like those little tiny things. If you're, you know, if you're around in the stream all the time, or if you're always listening to podcasts, like, promote it, because like it makes the creators know that it's working, that it's reaching someone, you know. On that note, I believe we need to take a second to take an ad break. One of our famous advertisers wants to tell you all about a great product. Hi, if you're hearing my voice, that means you've been listening to or watching 8-Bits with Brandon and PJ, and we're here to talk to you about your product and how it can help you in your life by do whatever your product does. So if you're an avid listener of the show, or you watch us on Twitch, then you'll know that your product is right for you.
That's right. If you have anything you'd like to promote, feel free to reach out to us. You can find us at hello@8bits.tv via email. You can find us on Twitter @8bitspod. let us know. We'd be happy to chat and share your goods with the world.
That's right. Fantastic. I get excited every time that little ad break runs because, like, I keep noticing little things in the video that I like. Like, most of what I like is that I can tell I recently had a haircut in that video, so my hair.
I thought it was going to be the opposite, where you're going to say every time you see a thing you wish you did different, which is more how I live my life.
Yeah. Yeah. 2022, and I'm living positively. Damn it.
I had a talk that I gave a lot mostly in 2019, and it was funny because you know, you give the talk a lot and everyone's like, okay, but like, again, especially in non-virtual, it's like most people don't go to like 20 conferences a year. So most people don't see it all the time, but some of your friends on the circuit do. And so like Aaron Aldrich had seen that talk like a ton of times. They always liked it and always said nice things, but there's one slide that had a typo in it. And every time I'd hit the slide, I would go, oh shit, I haven't fixed this typo. And it happened enough that I think it was like DevOps Days Nashville. I was sitting in the audience next to Aaron and I was going to like, my talk was going to be next. And he goes, oh, hey, he's like, quick. Did you fix the typo? Oh shit. You're right. Okay, good.
Awesome. Oh my God.
So Maddie, we were chatting earlier about how there's different paths to get into tech and all of them are absolutely valid. But I'm curious, for somebody who's listening right now and says like, wow, like this guy used to be a teacher, this guy used to, be in theater and I don't really have any of that, but I still want to get into tech. But I don't have the degree. Maddie, where do I start? What advice would you give him?
Okay. Well, I'm going to 100% temper this again with that. I am a cishet white dude. So my advice is to be taken in that my personal experience is different and is easier. But that said, I think if someone's like, okay, I don't know how to get into this thing, like the industry in general is where it's something where I don't have a lot of like, I don't think there's one wrong way to do it is what I mean. Like it's also, I guess what I'm getting at is like, find some way to get your foot in, right? Like even if you're like, I don't know if I want to be a front-end developer or a SRE or a whatever, it's like the good news is you don't need to know that right away, right? Yes. You know, like who's something, right? You know, and I would imagine that's where, again, sort of the same thing. If someone's like, hey, I think infrastructure is really interesting, there aren't really a lot of infrastructure boot camps, but you know what, like a coding boot camp might not be a bad idea because it can get you in that place. And one of the hardest parts, I think it is hard to break into quote infrastructure because the really interesting infrastructure challenges happen at a scale that you can't just sort of teach yourself, right? You know, so you kind of have to come up in a different way, you know, like do some other work. But then thankfully, because of the world we live in now with DevOps and with, you know, grayer areas, like you can be a front-end developer that's also interested in infrastructure and sort of do that along the way and where that comes. So it's a little bit easier. I don't want to say easier, but there's less of a rut that you go into and now you're following it because you made this decision early on that you were an enterprise developer. So now you just start stuck with Java for the rest of your life, right? Like
stuck with Java, a horror story.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the one thing. I just want to be really cautious because I think there are people who are better equipped to give better advice to under-indexed people than I am. So the best advice, sort of tongue-in-cheek, is like be born a white dude. Right? But
right.
That's how I did it, right? But that sucks. So, but that doesn't mean you can't. But it's the only way that I can tell you how to follow my experience. I think that the... don't try to do things alone. That's the other thing too. I think if you have, when you're trying to just anything, if you have not just an accountability partner, but it's more fun to learn with other people. And it doesn't even mean, even if it's informal, but like if you know people, if you have friends that are like, I'm kind of interested, it's like be study buddies, so to speak, do co-challenges together. Because also that is going to you can't really show that in your resume that gave you that skill, but that collaborative skill of being used to working together is powerful. And then that can lead you into some stuff. I think learning in the open, I will tell you this, that's another interesting way, and everyone's not comfortable with it. But I had recommended, you know, one of the people I'd recommended to be on the show is Annie Hedgepeth. And Annie, one of the main ways she got involved in tech was learning in the open. She has a non-traditional background. She wanted to learn something, and she decided to learn in the open, and she did such a good job of being that her... So, I'll tell you what it was. She wanted to learn InSpec, which is, a policy as code testing language, and it wasn't really well known. There wasn't a lot of docs. So Annie, as she was learning and going through, she documented everything she did in her blog. And for the longest time, I just don't know if this is still true, but for years, the official InSpec documentation basically just linked to Annie's blog. They're like, you just did this better. And then because of that, you know, so learning in the open is way easier to do these days than it ever has been, with streaming, with blogging, with whatever. And you'll get people that will help you. And it helps you. Then you have something to point to as well, right? Like, you know, so maybe that's a fun thing to do, is, you know, get some friends and be like, we're going to work through some training. Like PJ's, that's what PJ was doing with Python, right? You know, on your stream. Yeah. Like, you know, that's one thing. And hey, maybe it'll make you learn that you like doing this kind of thing. And maybe you'll want to do, training, education, DevRel, stuff like that. Because you're like, that was actually more fun than the thing I built.
Right. Something you said in that response that really struck me was, you don't have to know exactly what you're going to do. You just have to get started. And I think someone who's just deciding they want to do tech, and they're like, okay, I just learned that there's a bunch of different jobs, but they find a job that seems interesting based on the description, a couple articles they've read, and they're like, okay, but how do I become blank? And it's almost like, well, don't worry about necessarily how you become blank if you are over here and you haven't like started written a hello world yet. Knowing that I've got to get some basics in here, I've got to start learning something, the path towards blank will start to open up as you start to develop just tech skills and stuff like that. And I can't say enough good things for learning in the open, because that's what I did. When I was learning C#, I did it on Twitch. When I was learning .NET, I did it with Brandon, and Brandon learned it right alongside me. He hadn't used ASP.NET Core before, and he was like, we're going to build a website. Well, I was like, let's build a website. And he was like... Well, I'm a Xamarin developer, but okay, let's do this. And we worked on it together, and we would just sit there for, you know, about 2 hours a week working on stuff and making mistakes and breaking our database and causing errors that we couldn't fix for 3 hours. But it was this great experience of, one, learning how to collaborate, two, showing other people the work you're doing. Like you said, it creates a record of what you've done that can be extremely useful.
Absolutely. And I also love the idea of essentially announcing and sharing with the world what you're doing. So the example that came to my mind was, I'm currently training for the Napa Valley Marathon, which is in just a couple weeks now, which is kind of terrifying. God, but it's just me training on my own. But I've told so many people that I'm training for a marathon that... Uh-huh. If it doesn't happen, I feel like I've let those people down. I mean, I'm sure they'll still be proud of me either way. But,
we'll see.
but yeah, like Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday here in the US, I had to do a 22-mile training run. And I could barely sleep that night because I was so anxious, nervous, like didn't want to do it. But that was my motivation for going. It was like, I know I've told people about what my goals are for this marathon. I want to try and run it at an 8-minute mile pace, which I've never done before. And if I want to do that, then I've got to wake up at 6 a.m. on Sunday to go on this 22-mile run.
That's right.
You can almost essentially inspire yourself just by sharing your goals with your friends, family, on the internet, wherever, because everybody's cheering you on and they want you to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about just get involved, and we talked about that the path towards that specific job within tech isn't necessarily it's important to have your goals set and have that like focus on what you want to do, but there is no, like you said, there's no class for being like, I mean, there's no like DevOps class really. There's no degree in DevOps. There's no
Some places are trying to do it. But also, you may change your mind because as you come in, you are now know more about different things. So you want to begin with the end in mind, but understand that it can be fluid, right? Like sort of, you know, not to get into thing, but it's always like, you know, remember what was the big thing that everybody, you know, got all, you know, about John Kerry, always a flip flopper. And you're like, wait, you mean they changed? He changed his mind.
Changed his mind with new information.
With new information. So that can happen. Like, be dedicated and committed to your goal. But as you learn more things, you know, because the map is not the territory, right? You know, so like we have an understanding. I'll put it this way. It's not just about people that are new. This happens all the time. So I used to do in my job at Red Hat, it was around sort of like, you know, cultural transformation and especially with government agencies. But that was neither here nor there on that last part. But one of the things that would be funny is, you know, you would ask someone to like how they would rate themselves. Like you're like, OK, in these areas, and people would be like, oh, we're a 5 out of 5. And you're like, but because you only know that it can go so far, but wait, there's this whole more that can be, right? And Dr. Nicole Forsgren had a great, she's talked about this multiple times about why Nicole, and I agree with her, why maturity models are not great, because a maturity model implies an end state. And she gave this, as I've seen it in a couple of her talks, where she sort of talks about the map, like if you play World of Warcraft, right? Like how big Azeroth is continually changes, right? Like through each expansion, that map gets bigger and there's more things, right? But if you're at the beginning, you don't know, right? So like, you know, again, think about me, like, you know, writing that bio in 1993, where I was like, I was going to be, you know, what do you call it? A computer programmer. Cause that was the only thing I knew you could do with computers.
That was right? It.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that might've been all there was. So,
I mean, well, when you're young, also the only jobs you know are like baseball player, astronaut, marine biologist, and computer.
Fire.
Like that was it.
I wanted to be a Ninja Turtle when I grew up.
Yep.
Sadly, still hasn't happened.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's still time to know where this branch is gonna lead you.
Yeah. Well, so one other thing I like about that idea is just, you know, get started on your journey because you don't really know where you'll end up. My first internship in IT taught me that I didn't want to work in IT and, and that's okay. And also I got a little lucky cause it was just a summer internship. So I knew in 3 months, this was going to be over. But I respect people who work in IT so much because it is a thankless job. Nobody contacts IT because they want to say, thank you. They contact IT because they're mad at you for maybe something they did. And maybe something I configured wrong on their computer, sure. But nobody's happy when they call IT. It's a very thankless job. So make sure to thank your IT worker every now and again.
I was just going to say, so just like you talked about, just like we talked about, like the content creators. So it reminded me when I was at apartments.com, my colleague who, like, I was director of, you know, tech ops, and then my colleague who ran like data ops stuff for us, he was like, Sahel was always like, Matt, like, how come you always have a new laptop or you get the new phone or you get whatever? And I'm like, because at Christmas I go down to the help desk and I bring them cookies, and in the summer I bring them homemade jam and I treat them like people. I mean, it wasn't just bribing, but it was like, I know them and I know who they are and I'm friends with them. And so it means that I'm like, but they only know you when you have a problem. So you're just another person. It doesn't mean that they don't do good work. It doesn't mean you have to bribe your help desk to get work done. But again, just like the bar for being a non-terrible dude in tech is so low, the bar for treating your help desk, your HR, the gate agent at the airport, all these people just don't be a jerk. Like, and you will be like a breath of fresh air.
That's the thing. It's like, it's not, people are like, oh, you're bribing. I was like, no, I'm just being nice. And yeah, I'm building.
I brought cookies for my coworkers too.
Yeah, that's, you had some of the cookies. Like, yeah. You too got to experience some of this niceness. It really is just, it's building good relationships. And that's what I've started to learn all DevRel is building honest, real, authentic relationships with people. Be yourself, connect with people, and on those connections, you can talk about work stuff, but the connections and the people come first. And that's true of DevOps. You said earlier, culture isn't the most important, but it's the one we got to teach y'all the most about because you're resistant to it for some reason. It's culture. It's the people, right?
Yes.
Be people. Be nice. Be people. You can't hear it on the podcast, but my shirt says be kind to everyone.
Be kind to everyone.
Love it. So, Maddie, we only have a couple minutes left. And you are a very, very busy man. So I want to make sure we share all the amazing things you're doing. We've talked about the podcast that you do. We've talked about DevOps days. What else are you working on that we can share with the world?
So another thing. So I just, and maybe this is breaking news, I'll put this here. So for the last couple of years, I've hosted an online game show called DevOps Party Games. We actually decided recently that we're not doing it regularly anymore. So we're going to keep doing it kind of here and there. We do it as part of events, but still check out devopspartygames.com. It's been super fun. I told PJ he could be on, and that was right before we decided not to do it anymore. So no, I'm just kidding. We just do them more.
I still can be on. It's just
eventually. We just do them more as special events now rather than, you know, every month or whatever. Totally fun. The other thing is, so I do from a work perspective, but still it's fun. I do a stream at twitch.tv/Palumi. I do that every Thursday. If you're listening to this, it's already happened in the past. But if you are watching the stream right now, I just decided that this Thursday I'm going to take my personal Hugo website and deploy it all with Palumi and, you know, just sort of do a static site build. I don't know how it's going to go. I'm just going to just sort of figure it out and have some fun. But yeah, go twitch.tv/Palumi. Twitter is your best place to find out whatever nonsense I'm up to. I'm at that at Matt Stratton on Twitter. And yeah, DevOps Day Chicago is hopefully coming up soon. I mean, it's hard to make any kind of plans, but go to devopsdays.org to see any upcoming DevOps Days. There's a lot that are going on. Excited to be back, and I hope to see you all on the internets. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, you can follow us at 8bits.tv. Make sure to check out everything that Matt just told you about. DevOps Days, DevOps Party, all the great stuff. And make sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube so you can always see when we're on and live. And we will see you all next time.